Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
When they hired Kyle, I was thrilled. I'm optimistic. I think we'll get there.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. We'll talk to Steve about the 49ers' 40-10 loss to the Cowboys and the Dwight Clark halftime celebration in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Steve, we'll talk about the game in a moment, but I wanted to start actually with the halftime ceremony for Dwight Clark because, I mean, that seemed like it was really special and you were there to be a part of it. And I know your career didn't overlap with Dwight's, but, you know, being former 49ers, there's a great family atmosphere surrounding it. And Dwight seems like he was such a great guy and, of course, had the legendary catch and a really nice career with the 49ers. So how emotional was it for everybody?
I'd go pretty far out on a limb and say that there was probably not a dry eye in the house, to be honest. Actually, guys in the morning at the reception were kind of joking how long would it take for Mr. D to cry, and he was crying already, I think, before it even started.
Wow.
It was really neat to see all the guys that came back, especially I think there were 37 guys, if I'm correct, from the 81 team that came back. I mean, guys that, you know, Keith Fawnhorst, you know, is basically wheelchair bound. And, Fred Dean. Some guys that I haven't met of those guys, you know, from over the years. So it was really neat to see. And obviously, you know, they thought highly of Dwight when they played with him and still do, and hence the reason the turnout was so good.
You know, when you think about the catch, and that's such a great memory for 49ers fans. I mean, for me, I think about being in my parents' living room and watching that play and just in disbelief, you know, that he caught the ball. But I wanted to go through it a little bit with you because I know you've seen it a lot and you played with Joe Montana. Yeah. What was your first reaction when you first saw it and heard about it?
You know, I remember seeing it live. Just like you said, I was, you know, in our family room watching the game, and I had told the media this, that because they asked me, you know, back then, you know, the 4 o'clock Eastern game, as we referred to it, you know, growing up on the East Coast, was a lot of times it was the Rams or the 49ers. I mean, because it was a 1 o'clock game out here. And obviously that was a playoff game, but was going to be on no matter what. I remember seeing it live, and over the years hearing stories of, you know, what they had run, before it, and all those things, and that they had run the sprint right option earlier in the game, and I think that Joe missed it earlier in the game, that he had Freddie right away, Freddie Solomon. A couple things that I just learned in watching some of the highlights that they were showing in our reception that we had, and on the Jumbotron at halftime. I didn't remember that Joe had missed Freddie on a post corner in the end zone the play before.
Well, I didn't remember that either. Okay.
they showed that in the highlights, and maybe it was a few plays before, but it was he was open and Joe just overshot him a little bit. But anyway, when Joe goes to the sideline And Bill tells him, remember, you're going to have Freddie right away. You know, on the kind of the two-step out route is what it is. And so Joe comes out looking for him. You know, I've asked him this over the years. He comes out looking for him, but Freddie slips.
So you gotta improvise. So
if you watch it closer, you see Joe. You know, this was a very our footwork on this play was very, very kind of specific, very dance oriented. You know, it was a drop step, 1-2 throw, and if you watch Joe and do it, and all of a sudden he brings it back to throw it, and he doesn't have it. So then he keeps going, and then in replays, you always just see Joe, you know, pumping and moving and finding time, and then you see the catch. Well, one of the other things that they played at halftime, which I didn't realize, is I'd never seen the game angle or a different angle where you see the whole play. And Dwight's route is exactly the way that Bill had always drawn it up,
huh?
You know, or Holmgren or whomever we play for, you know. And so Dwight does exactly what he's supposed to do. He outside releases to get the corner's eyes away from the inside receiver. He circles them in kind of to the center of the field in the back of the end zone, and then he pivots. You know, he pivots back, pivots inside, so he's facing Joe, and starts to run back out. And that's the first time I've ever seen that angle. I mean, it's textbook.
Wow.
And you know how Joe ever decided, okay, where's my, you know, what's kind of my launch angle? Where's the, you know, how high do I need to put this? And then it becomes, I guess from there, it becomes iconic, you know. I mean, probably the most iconic catch in the history of the NFL. It's amazing. It really is, to think that Dwight can go up and get it. Another thing on that angle that I didn't realize over the years is that Everson kind of takes an
Everson Walls, yeah.
Everson Walls, so that when Dwight pivots and goes back to his left, to Dwight's left, and he starts to go back toward the deep corner, and the ball's coming, well, Everson takes up an angle behind him instead of taking an angle in front of him. You know, I don't know if he thinks that the ball is going over his head, maybe. I'm not sure. It's just interesting. I had never seen that angle of the play before either, and never realized that he took that angle behind him.
And maybe you're throwing the ball so that only Dwight Clark can catch it. I mean,
no question. That's what Joe was doing.
Right.
No question. And just to think that that it got to that perfect apex that, you know, maybe it's probably, I'd say, about 10 feet in the air where Dwight can go get it with two hands, is amazing. And like I said, I guess that's what makes it Joe buying time and Dwight going up and get it makes it so iconic in the situation that it was in.
The buying time part really amazes me because most quarterbacks get a little panicky when you're getting towards the sideline and here comes the rush. And, you know, and like you said, I mean, he's pumping and he just was very cool on that play.
He's backing up. He's buying time. He's getting close to the sideline now. And then just decides, okay, obviously he sees Dwight coming out and he knows what Dwight's doing. Just puts it, like I said, puts it up to where only Dwight is going to have a chance to catch it.
So the 49ers go to their first Super Bowl, win their first Super Bowl. What do you think that play meant? I mean, for me, it means so much that it's the screensaver on my iPad, the photo. It's just an incredible photo. I mean, yeah, it's just you never want to forget that. So what do you think it meant? I mean, what did you hear about it when you joined the 49ers? It just seems like it's always there, you know, for people to remember and cherish.
It is totally always there for us to cherish. But it's part of a play that, you know, if I were an offensive coordinator today, the play would be in our system no matter what system it is. You know, anytime you get a critical situation and it's third and one or fourth and two, you're like, run sprint right option. I mean, just the way it is, you know. It's like if it were third and three or third and four or five and run 200 jet X slant. I mean, it's not automatic, but it's pretty close. sprint right option, obviously a great play. The first choice, like I said, was Freddie. He slips. You don't have him. Okay, you got a second choice in Dwight. He runs a textbook route. And in that situation, Joe couldn't run it, but in some situations where – maybe you, as a quarterback, you get to the edge and you don't have either of the receivers, and you can run it for yourself for a first down. So you have three great options on the play, and then to have that completion in that situation in the NFC Championship game against a team that you've lost to in history a few times, the Cowboys were the team of the 70s,
right?
So it makes it a catch for a lifetime.
Coming up, we'll break down the 49ers' 40-10 loss to the Cowboys at Levi's Stadium right after this. There's more to tell you about as far as my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. 49ers fans from outside the Bay Area, listen up. TPC Harding Park has a great deal for you when you are planning your trip to Levi's Stadium to see the 49ers. While you're in town, take advantage of Golf the Gridiron, featuring discounted tee times and free club rentals. Visit tpc.com and click on special offers for tee time deals at San Francisco's own TPC Harding Park. Let's fast forward 36 years to the Cowboys 49ers on Sunday. Yeah, we have to. I don't really want to.
There's hope. I mean, they keep showing that, you know, in 79, the 49ers were 0-6 to start, you know.
Well, now they're 0-7, and unfortunately, you and other ex-49ers had to watch this, you know, witnessing the Cowboys just destroying the 49ers. I mean, not just the final score, but just the way they were able to move the ball, you know, over 500 yards of total offense, running with Elliott. I mean, very impressive game all the way around. I mean, Dez Bryant was manhandling cornerbacks. It was a tough one to watch, wasn't it?
It was tough. They're still good. I mean, they're better than whatever they are, 3-4-3 now, or what are they, 5 now? I think they're 4-3. They were.
I think they're 3-3.
Are they 3-4?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up again. They're
better than the record.
They're 3-3.
3-3. Yeah. Okay, they had a bye already. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're better than that. I mean, they're still, you know, and then they get Lee back at linebacker. They're good on defense. Their offense is really good. Their run blocking's spectacular, and they have a great running back. And their pass protection was, for the most part, was really good. Every once in a while, you know, the Niners front four got home, and then they're still a good team. The Niners are not as good right now, and we all hope that they can get there soon.
It seemed like the defense had turned the corner earlier this season. There were some games where, you know, they really played well. But now, I mean, just getting gashed. You know, they could not tackle Elliott.
Right.
He ran for 147 yards. He had that one reception where he just danced down the sideline. It was like 72 yards, and they just could not make a tackle on him. And I know there have been some injuries and everything. You had some different players playing at the end of the game on the line. You know, Armstead's out now and some other guys. But I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the discipline defensively needs to improve going forward, doesn't it?
It does. But now you've taken an all-pro in Navarro out of the middle, someone who is obviously a leader.
Oh, yeah.
And someone who young guys are looking to for strength, for, you know, guidance. The young guys get confidence that he's in there, you know, because he's going to make plays that, you know, the mere mortal couldn't.
Right. Yeah. He did.
So now all of a sudden he's gone and you have a rookie in there, really only playing his first game. I mean, he played 10 plays in the first game of the season.
Reuben Foster. Yeah. And he had a really good hit on Elliott. One of them. Yeah.
He did. Who's going to be a terrific player. There's no doubt in my mind. But all of a sudden you have a, you know, basically 11 young guys. I'm trying to think. I mean, Ed Reed's probably the
Eric. Yeah, Eric Reed.
I mean, Eric.
And they're moving him too. He's not really playing safety. He was playing linebacker because Tart took his spot basically.
Yeah, and Tart is playing really well.
Yeah.
And he needs to be on the field so they can move. They can move Eric around with his size and put him kind of in that whip linebacker spot, even though, or in a strong safety spot, even though Ray Ray, I think, is pretty good at that whip linebacker spot, that outside weak side linebacker. But yeah, I mean, Eric's, what's this, his fifth year? And honestly, I think he's the oldest. I mean, he's probably the oldest guy on the field starting anyway that
yeah.
I can think of. So all of a sudden you have a lot of young guys like out there kind of looking around like, okay, who's going to make a play here kind of thing. And I think that they looked inexperienced, and made some young player mistakes. I thought the Cowboys got to the end, you know, Solomon Thomas a few times, you know, chasing the back and Dak is, you know, running with the ball, you know, looking for somebody downfield, with nobody challenging him. So they got to the edge a few times, I thought, the Cowboys did pretty well. But they threw the ball well. They ran the ball, as you mentioned. The proceed shoot. I just drew a blank. Dez Bryant.
Bryant's strong.
He looked strong. Yeah. Strong. I mean, just manhandling some of the corners. He really did.
Yeah, you wonder why he wasn't having a bigger year coming in. I mean, it seems like they could go to him, but against this 49ers team, it was there. I mean, Rashard Robinson, too, continues to struggle with some penalties. There was one where, you know, the 49ers forced an intentional grounding, but it didn't matter because there was a legal contact. Robinson's having some problems, you know, with the pass interference calls. He didn't turn quick enough on that one to look at the pass. You got to do that as a defensive back.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, he seems like he's going to be a really good player. There were a couple, that one that you just referred to, where he just seems to get twisted around right now. You know, he's not exactly sure where he is in space and, as you mentioned, not getting his head around to see the ball and kind of become the receiver himself because he seems like he's with the receiver, but he's not in the right spot. You know what I mean? He's not necessarily in his hip pocket. He's all over the receiver.
So he's having to clutch and grab at him. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
What about the quarterback position? And you know, it's the first NFL start for C.J. Beathard. He came on in relief in the previous game. And you know, I mean, this is a blowout game. It's a tough one to be a part of, but there were some good moments I thought in there where, especially when he's on the run, when he's rolling, he seems to be able to find some receivers. And in that respect, what were some of the positives that you saw?
Yeah, I think for the most part, he threw the ball pretty well. Yeah. He misfired on a few that I know he would love to have back, where he did have a receiver open. But I thought for the most part he did pretty good. I mean, he's, you know, running around a little bit, you know, a few times trying to get away from the rush. I think he runs with the ball well. He seems fearless. He's, you know, running into people.
He is a tough guy. I mean, he handled five sacks, and yeah,
he really does. He really does seem to be a tough guy. You know, there were some things that I thought he looked. I thought his feet looked a little bit slow a few times. Like there wasn't an urgency to get rid of it, or to not so much. I shouldn't say get rid of it, but you know, get it out of your hand, get it to the receiver. But that will come with, you know, that will come with time. I think, I mean, for the most part, he played pretty well. Maybe unfortunately they had good field position there before the half and driving, you know, a couple good passes, a couple good runs. And then, I don't know if it was Staley got beat or if it was a tight end that was over there blocking that got beat. And, you know, then there's a big turnover.
There was that DeMarcus Lawrence sack that caused the fumble.
Yeah, we didn't get anything out of that good field position.
Yeah, you can only imagine how nervous he must have been. You go back to your first start. You know,
oh my God,
what you're thinking? I've had baseball pitchers tell me that too. How tough that is, the first start taking the mound in baseball. And then I can imagine as a quarterback, you know, your first start, home game.
Yeah, and he looked a little bit. And hey, I mean, as he should be. I mean, I think overall it was pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I look back to my first one. It was in the Dome against the Dome Patrol, which was a really good defense in New Orleans.
Oh,
you know, back in the late 80s, really good. You know, and they just kicked my butt all day.
Well, even Troy Aikman said his was a rough one.
I can totally feel for him, but I like his moxie. I mean, he seems to not get rattled, and his expression. You know, watching the telecast when they show him up close, the expression didn't really seemed to change and didn't, you know, he didn't look like he was startled or, you know, a deer in headlights or, he looked like he knew what he was doing and I think it showed for the most part.
Meanwhile, Carson Wentz, a young quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, is tearing it up. Four touchdowns in that win against Washington. And now the 49ers, of all teams that you got to face, they got to go to Philadelphia on Sunday to play the Eagles, who are 6-1. I mean, it just doesn't get any easier. Man, I mean, and Wentz looks like he's really settling in as being one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, doesn't he?
He looked really good last night. I watched 99% of it. He looked really good. They threw the ball well. You know, they didn't run the ball exceptionally well, I didn't think, but obviously they have that capability with Blunt. And they looked pretty damn good on defense. You know, getting after the quarterback. Not an easy place to go and play. What was Gruden calling him? He was going back to the old Flyers days when they called them the Broad Street Bullies. That was the Flyers. He was referring to the he was referring to the Eagles last night as the Bullies of Broad Street.
And that's your hometown. I mean, you know what it's like.
That's my hometown.
For athletes there, yeah.
I wish I was headed back there with them to see that one. But not an easy place to go and play, and having to go play a team that's playing really well right now.
You know, I once worked with Mike Schmidt actually on the World Baseball Classic, and he was telling me, was he one of your childhood heroes?
Well, yeah. The first time I have to tell you a story, I've gotten to know him a little bit over the years. And the first time I met him was like early 90s at the Celebrity Golf Classic, up in.
Oh, he's really into golf, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good golfer. And I said, Mike, I grew up in Philadelphia and loved watching you play. And I think you're a wonderful player. I said, but if someone would have never watched the game and only read the Philadelphia Inquirer, I would have thought you were a bum.
Exactly. That's what I was going to get to. He said how tough it was to play there, especially initially.
And he laughed. He laughed. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a lifetime 300 hitter, won, like 9 gold gloves.
Hall of Famer, yeah.
And a Hall of Famer. And if you never would have watched the game and just listened to the media, you would have thought the guy was a bum.
Why is it like that there? Why are they so tough on their athletes?
I don't know. Yeah. All I can say is I wanted to be drafted by the Eagles. I thought it was going to be. And it was basically down to Randall and me. And in hindsight, I'm glad they never drafted me because it would have been a nightmare on my family.
Much, much easier out here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I mean.
I know you didn't spend your entire career with the 49ers, but at least the media is reasonable, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And even the fans.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the last thing I wanted to ask you here. It's just, being a part of this as a, you're a former player and a fan, really. How do you think everybody's reacting to it? Because you're sort of giving a pass to this new regime because you've had so many changes at coach and now the GM and all that. And to be 0-7, do you think people are understanding of the rebuilding process, or are they just, continuing to be frustrated by the whole thing?
I think everybody's, I'd like to think that everybody's being patient because we need to be. I think that John and Kyle are on the right path. There's a lot of talent that I think is still needed. So we need to continue to be patient. This is, it's not going to happen overnight.
No,
it's going to take, it's going to take a couple of years, maybe 3 years. I mean, I said from the beginning when they made the change that, hey, if they're 4-12 this year, and I know you and I have talked about this, if they're 4-12 this year, yeah, nobody's really happy, but that shows improvement. If they're 6-10 next year, kind of the same thing. Improvement, but not great. But if we can get to 8-8 in a year or two, then okay, we're one or two wins away from being in the playoffs.
Right.
So, we definitely need to be patient because we. Obviously, Kyle and John aren't going anywhere because they gave them 6-year contracts.
Right.
But the last thing we need, is more change. The only thing that needs to change is that they need to acquire more talent.
They need to act like the Astros because the Astros were a 100 loss team.
Yeah.
Now they're in the World Series. So there you go. It can turn around.
No question. I think John McVay said it best on Sunday morning. He was just kind of observing all the guys, and he said gosh, I wish I could call Bill in heaven and tell him how successful all these guys have been in life. You know, I've said many times that when you see how many guys have been successful in life that were on those teams, you realize like, that's why we were good. You know, because we had obviously a lot of talented players, but we had a lot of good people that have done well in life.
Yeah, and that's great. And hopefully they can get back to that at some point in the near future. Well, Steve, thanks a lot again. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Join us again next week. We will podcast on Wednesday next week as the 49ers go to Philadelphia and play the Eagles on Sunday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to 49ers Extra on thesportsvirus.com.